Lean Leadership Podcast, episode 53.
This is the Lean Leadership Podcast. Equip yourself with the tools for success in your team's lean journey by learning from the world's top lean professionals. Listen at the risk of improving with your host, Chris Burnham.
Today's guest is Tracy Defoe. Tracy is an adult education consultant specializing in workplace learning. Her work history includes research, teaching, and program development, much of which culminates in peer-led learning. She's a proud Kata geek and a humble lean practitioner. For more than 10 years, Tracy has been learning, coaching, and sharing her experiences with the improvement in coaching Kata described in Mike Rother's book, The Toyota Kata Practice Guide. Tracy is keen on building community and connecting people. She is co-founder of the worldwide online community, Kata Girl Geeks, and of Kata School Cascadia. She also facilitates the Kata Coaching Dojo. She is a frequent speaker at conferences including KataCon and KataCon Europe. Today's guest, Tracy Defoe. All right. Well, Tracy, we briefly touched on who you were in the intro, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how lean or continuous improvement is a part of your life?
Well, sure, Chris. Thanks a lot. I'm an adult educator, and I'm particularly interested in what people learn at work. So I was working in a local manufacturer here in Vancouver, Canada, that has a global market share in their industry, like so a big world-class lean place, and they were getting me to help them with their learning. When I first heard about, well, first they asked me to help them teach lean because I was a little better at teaching than they were. And that's where I first got interested in the peer-to-peer continuous learning, which you can see I have the Toyota Kata book here. And for the last 10 years or so, my emphasis has been on teaching the improvement Kata and the coaching Kata, learning it and sort of spreading it.
So that's the good work. I'm sure Mr. Rother would appreciate you having his book in a very prominent place in the background. So Mike, thank you. We hope you're watching or listening. So before we get started with the interview, we always ask our guests to share with us a quote or a mantra from a favorite leader. Can you tell us what your quote is and why you chose it?
Well, my quote is one that I actually have on a button, and I don't have the button handy, I don't think, but somebody who I coach with named Hal Froelich in Washington State used to work for what he calls a local airplane company in Seattle. I said he always calls it a local airplane company. And he's somebody who introduced me first to the improvement Kata. And he says, too often PDCA is plan, discuss, complicate, and abandon. And Kata is the remedy to that. So we have plan, discuss, complicate, abandon, or Kata on a button. And some, if we have a pause, I will go find you the button. In fact, I'll send you a button if you want.
I will put the mailing address for me in the email follow-up. Mm-hmm. For
Isn't that great? Plan, discuss, complicate, abandon?
That's right up there with, instead of lean or it's lame, it's lean is misguidingly executed is another one that I've seen from that standpoint. So people, we love acronyms. That's they're fun to play with. Well, one of my goals for this podcast is to help other leaders, other educators resonate with your experiences. Can you kind of tell us a story about how or why you chose the profession that you're in right now?
Well, do you want to hear about the adult education one or the how I got involved in manufacturing and lean?
Whatever question you want to answer.
I think the manufacturing one is more a fun story. So I was teaching at the University of British Columbia when this local manufacturer was trying to attain a quality designation, and they were trying to get actually Ford Q1. And they were the first company in Western Canada to try to get that. They were supplied auto parts as well as lots of other things. And they have been trying for almost 2 years to meet all the criteria. And it's a little bit like, you know, when you have a quality designation, there's inspectors and everybody has to be able to explain things. And they had to do SPC, statistical process control charts. And they had a big population. It was at that time a small company where they had like 100 people and 80 of them worked in the factory and most of them didn't speak English. And I was English as a second language and literacy teacher at UBC, and I taught teachers too. So I was home doing nothing on a maternity leave. And so the university asked me if I'd go have lunch with the guy who ran this company. I had lunch with him and I told him I thought if I had a few weeks to talk to people, I could probably fix that and design a program. And so that's what we did. And in 9 weeks, they had their quality designation. So he said, well, our engineers failed to teach this for 2 years and you did it in 9 weeks. Maybe we suck at teaching. Right. So he had like a flash. And and so that company is still a client of mine. It was my first ever client. Eventually, I left university, had more kids, became a consultant. And they drew me into all of their teaching, including their lean, when they were learning continuous improvement and how they taught it to each other and how they explained it and how we built the literacy and numeracy, because there's a lot of interpreting information from numbers and data that's involved. And I discovered which charts the finance department put out that even the boss didn't understand, and then which charts the workers understood for different reasons than the engineers did. And anyway, I have a long story, lots of stories about that. That's how I got interested. And then I redesigned I'm sure you've heard of Lean 101. Have you ever heard of Lean 101?
Yes, ma'am.
Lean 101 is a classic Canadian course that's used around the North America and the world because Dave Hogg and his partners at High Performance Solutions in Ontario, the people who had the first consortia, they used to give it away. So two or three times in my career, I have redesigned Lean 101 to make it either more literacy friendly or easier for other people to teach or more active. Like it's started out as kind of passive course for the morning part. Anyway, I was doing that and I was telling people to ask questions, not give answers. Never give answers, ask questions, find out the edge of what people knew, you know, start there and draw out participation from your team. When this came to the attention of somebody at the University of Michigan who said, you should talk to Mike Rother. And so that's how I got interested and drawn really early, not early, like I wasn't into the research time or the very first beta testing, which I have lots of friends now who were there then. But pretty soon after the book was published, I got invited to a meetup in Seattle or in the Everett area, which is not far a drive for me from Vancouver. And that was about 2011, although somebody told me 2010. So that's a long time ago now, 10 years. We were talking about the Vancouver Olympics. I remember that. So it was around that time. So that's how I got interested in it. And then as an educator, everything to do with getting people to see that almost all management interaction is a form of teaching, right? Particularly culture teaching. And so, and you get the culture that you display, that you reinforce, that you talk about. So that's sort of a small synopsis of how I got to be, how I went from teaching at the university. And my academic background is that I have a master's in curriculum and instruction. And so that's, you know, what can be taught and how can you teach it? So making up courses or designing learning is sort of, it's in my wheelhouse. Something
it's
I like.
Your, it's, yeah. It's your it's your natural place. What
it's my happy place.
What I love about that story is that instead of this moment where you're having this lunch and they say our engineers couldn't do it for 2 years, you did it in nine weeks. It wasn't Eureka. It was, oh wow, that was great. Can you do that again?
Can you do that again for like 30 years? Yeah.
Show me one more time. One more time. Let me see that.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
I've probably worked with 60 or 70 people very closely at that company now, and I can tell you they are all excellent instructors.
But I think what I also hear and what I've experienced in my own career is that every great teacher is a good learner first, and they understand how to learn. And I think as long as you have a learning spirit, it allows you to have a teaching spirit.
So many people in education, because I actually maintain a small academic job at a university. I have about 1/16th of a full-time job. And at this point, I'm kind of a ringer in the department. I mostly mentor younger people or I write grants. Right, because I'm good at getting money, basically. And a lot of plain language will help you with that. But anyway, a lot of people ask me about why do you like workplace education or why do you do it? And I always say that there's high risk real life problems. right? Like you want a thrill in your work, go into the real world and try to do something or help people or make a change, because it's real. This is people's livelihoods and their careers. And, you know, spoiler alert, no end of great problems to work on. Like,
yeah.
It's like an endless number of interesting and engaging things to work on.
The grading system's a little different in the real world as well. So,
yes.
Well, you've shared all these successes that you've had along the way and what I would consider, you know, seminal moments in your career where you've learned and there's been a pivot and the next step of learning, but there has to be some moments that haven't quite gone as you had planned. And some people may call those setbacks or pitfalls. Can you tell us about one that stands out for you and what you learned from that?
Well, this is what I've written about and published before. And so, but it was fairly early in my career. I did a needs assessment, organizational needs assessment, so like a research report on a place and then a recommendation of training and what they could do. It was a joint labor management committee that hired me in the forest industry, which you should at least think, maybe not where you are, but here, that means a highly unionized, fairly male-dominated, testosterone-driven, and somewhat combative environment. And of course, I, as the outside person, you know, I have a good relationship with the union side and the management side. And we had done this report, and I was really happy with it and really proud of it. And the union leader, the local president, called me and said, they asked me, you know, the rest of the committee asked me to call you and say, could you please come, you know, on Friday? And we're going to have a meeting to talk about the report. And I said, okay, like, how long is it? And what's expected of me? And he said, oh, I think it's just like, you know, a short meeting and we can give out the copies. Anyway, I get there and they have assembled the entire brain trust of this very big company to hear this report. I have no slides. I have no overheads. I have no particular agenda. And so I go in, I you know, open the book. We review the executive summary, and it's pretty clear that they were expecting like a big formal report, which because they paid for this report too. So I call break. You know, break. I go for a break. We take a break, and I get the union leader in the room with me and the head of the company, who's the manager from this committee, and they work out that they had never told me. Like this, the union leader had never been to one of these meetings, so he didn't know what was expected. The manager had punted it to him, and he had downplayed it to me. And we worked out a communication thing that I have carried with me for a long time, which is in my job as a consultant, most of the time people have some issue or problem, and they're trying to move it from their desk to my desk. And my job completely is to move it back to their desk. Right? So to give it back to them. So by dropping the ball with that committee, it gelled the committee in a huge way because they all realized that they couldn't coast anymore. And after that, every time there was something to do, they always did what they were supposed to do. And I was always just able to support and I didn't have to carry the ball. And I think it's a really good, like the clear communication, the get the expectations right, but also give people stuff to do. Right? Because when you come in as a consultant, I think your job is always to remind everybody that you're not staying, you don't work there, and they have to learn this stuff because you get to go home, right? And they have to stay.
Yeah. The whatever goes on in continuation after you leave, it's there. And you've moved on to the next set of problems, the next set of challenges and whatnot. I love how what could have been a really bad moment. You paused, you said time out, and you gathered the stakeholders together. You gathered the stakeholders together and you guys developed a plan on the fly that allowed you to be able to be successful going forward. The other thing that stands out to me about that, and in teams that I've worked with, other folks that have worked for me that I've coached, mm-hmm. I remember sitting down and, you know, in our one-on-one, and we're reviewing all the work that this individual has to do. And I'm like, where did you pick up all these action items? I'm a little confused here. I thought you were helping this team. I didn't realize you were doing the work for them. I said, what happened? And he goes, well, you know, there was this silence about when it says who's going to take this action plan. And I had to move the project forward. So I just said, I'll do it. I've got it. Yeah. And I said, okay, I need you to coach a moment here. I need you to, when it's uncomfortable and quiet, I need you to say, who's going to take this on?
Yes.
And then
yes.
just be quiet.
That's one of those places where a teaching skill transfers so well, you know, because we teach teachers to count to 30 in their head. And if nobody has said anything, to count to 60. And if nobody has said anything, to count to 120. Like, because somebody will break before you, right? Somebody will always speak up.
If you have that mental resolve to stay quiet, but for the uninitiated, I'll call it that. That's a very uncomfortable place to be in a room full of silence, especially if you are a get things done type individual with a type A personality that's driven to, to take action, has a bias for action.
But that's how you end up with those people who complain they have to do everything, and the team, you know, and everybody's like, these guys are losers or something. It's because they didn't make the space for them to do it.
Well, for me personally, I learned to be quiet, and then I counted. But I have to move things forward because I'm also that type A driven person, and I'll wait, and whoever makes eye contact with me first is going to get it. Tim, you look like you have a question. Do you want to take this one on?
Right.
Yeah, it works. For our younger listeners and for younger viewers, when Tracy talked about an overhead, that's what we operated off of before PowerPoint was a thing. Like we
had I made a thing with my hands. Yes.
it was before it was dry erase, before there was a dry erase board. We had transparencies. Yep. You could make them ahead of time. You could even photocopy a transparency and lay it over. And you had these, manila folders with a transparency and a sheet of sheets of paper between each one.
And if you're fancy, you could get frames.
Oh yeah. I remember an instructor had the opaque projector where they could slide the book up underneath and it projected it up onto the screen.
Yes. We had those when I was in elementary school.
So a younger generation just won't understand. There was life before PowerPoint it was a lot less, there wasn't as much bullet point thinking back then either. Right. So, well, you shared a little bit about it up front, but there has to be like a favorite moment in your learning and teaching career with continuous improvement, or what you would call an aha moment. What can you share with us one of those moments and kind of what it meant to you?
Well, one of the many, the many things I've done is I've helped co-facilitate a workers group to learn lean. We call it Kaizen Club. It's been going for... Well, we got interrupted by COVID, but before COVID, I think we were in our 14th year. And because I know your audience, I thought I would tell this story about one day, I don't know, it was a summer day or something. Anyway, only two women showed up after their shift to go to Kaizen Club. And so I pulled an idea that had come from one of the supervisors that they were having trouble meeting their production goal in a cell that had been... it had been taken down and just re-put up. So it was been like reactivated cell. And so just for fun and for an exercise, I said, let's go down, look at the cell layout, watch them for a while. And then just for fun, we'll each redraw the cell layout. So, you know, the three of us did it. And then the cell layout driven by one of these women, by the way, were machine operators. One of them ran a CNC machine. The other one ran kind of a lathe kind of a machine, lower tech. One of them, the layout was so good, we decided to walk back and show it to the supervisor. And the way that the cell had been set up, which somebody must have thought the way it was before, people had to lift a fairly heavy product between the different stations in the cell. So one of the things the lady did, which is like just kind of lean 101, is she made a single table so you could move it without ever lifting it, right? And it was a U shape, and it led to a kind of unmovable testing station because it had a big vent for the air. And then we added in places for standard whips, right? So there's a piece always between the other pieces. And these people were having, this particular cell was two shifts. They were having trouble meeting their production because they weren't loading the whip, right? So it took them 2 hours to get anything in the start of their shift to the testing bench, which meant they were limited by how many they could do in a day. So we went down, we came back the next time and built the whole thing out of cardboard, the way you do on the floor, and we showed it to the workers, and everybody agreed to give it a try. And almost right away, they were doing as many in one shift as they used to do in two. So the workers were thrilled because nobody likes working overtime in the summer, right? They were working overtime. In fact, lots of people who are on that shift that ends at midnight would rather not be on the shift that ends at midnight. And so it was so of course the woman, the worker who made the design ended up getting an award, which was great at the end of the year for her innovation. But also just the idea that your average lathe operator, given a little knowledge and the opportunity to draw an idea, can probably come up with an idea that is as good or maybe better because it's more practical than scores of people who don't work there. That's why I like that story.
Yeah, I love that story. News tip to folks that are listening, the expert for the process is the person, the man or woman that's closest to the work. They know it best. They know it most intimately. They do it every day. And it reinforces, Tracy, improvement is something you do with someone, not at someone.
Well, that's actually why this one worked, I think, is because she didn't work in that cell, but she did work on the floor. And so right away, the day shift said, well, if we leave WIP between every station, the afternoon shift won't do it for us. And then their numbers will be good and our numbers will be bad. So we brokered an understanding that we would try, everyone would try to leave the right WIP in every place and leave one on the test bench. And I don't know if a manager would have got such a, okay, we'll try it. But there was something about three ladies who came down and just said, we think this will work. Here, let me show you. Let's do the math. We'll show you the math. Let's walk it. Okay, it seems easier. So let's try it. So they did try it and it worked. But yeah, I think because it came as, it was almost like she wants us to try it. She's nice. We know her. We'll try it. It was almost like that. It was almost more social than it was in any other way, but it worked.
That's a different form of influence that people don't understand. It's like that peer influence has tremendous power. Like peer to peer, it's it's the same way with you think about teams that when you consider it's not just first shift or second shift or A shift or B shift. It's this department. We're a team. You are responsible for not only your success, but the success of your teammate. Keeping that in mind, what can we do to make sure that you're set up for success when you walk in the morning or in the afternoon?
Right? That's a lesson I think managers miss all the time. Like they think they're on team operations and not on team company-wide, right? And so they get really comfortable in running their department or with their, you know, running finance or running quality. They don't get that unless the executive team wins, they don't win. There's no win. Like quality team can't win by itself.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of lessons in there of with cross-functional teams when you're sitting there and you have team goals and not individual production goals. There's so many lessons. We could do a whole nother episode.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It's a great story. I think it's always my hope with this podcast that when people hear stories like that, there's something going on wherever they're working, where they're, hey, I heard on this podcast, this team did this. Let's run the experiment. I mean, that's kind of the basis behind Kata. Okay, I understand. Let's try. Let's see what we can go learn and how quickly we can go learn from it. Mm-hmm. Well, do you have a lean or continuous improvement pet peeve or something you frequently see being applied or done wrong?
Well, one of my pet peeves is people who think they've stopped learning. You know, they got the certificate or they did the one big project and they're kind of riding that laurel. So I mentioned in my bio that I've started a couple of groups this year. One of them is called Kata Girl Geeks, and we are like a worldwide And I say that like, you know, moving my hand, because it's literally women from Africa and women from the Middle East and women from Europe and women from North America and women from, you know, like Australia. Like we're basically a lot of time zones in that group. And a lot of people come to us and say, oh, I'm a coach. I'm a CATA coach. So we have this kind of policy we said a while ago that we follow the starter CATA. So that means everybody's a learner and then everybody progresses and becomes a coach or a second coach. And so when sometimes people come, women come and say, I'm already a coach. And we're like, great. But in our group, you have to be a learner, you know, for maybe 9 weeks at least. Well, if some second coaches and coaches assess your knowledge and then, you know, cool, we could make you a coach, or you maybe will be a learner for a while. And the people who are legitimately like have that learner mindset or the CATA mindset, basically, like, they're like, oh my God, that's so cool. I would love that. And, you know, yay. And then the other ones are like, oh, sorry, I'm out. You know, and so that's a bit of a pet peeve, that people who aren't willing to put on those hats of the learner and then be the head of the project or whatever. So that's a pet peeve for sure.
I love those stories of folks that just, they don't ride their title, they don't ride their experiences, they just want to participate. Mm-hmm. I had a chance one time, I was at a conference, and I'm sitting at a table listening to Gene Cunningham and Ori Fumi talk about when they were at Landsec and when they were making changes. They were literally, here's the CFO, and they're literally on the floor moving machines at night in order to make stuff happen. And it wasn't, oh, we had somebody. They did the work. They participated as a participant. You don't always have to be the conductor, so to speak. Mm-hmm. In my own career, there have been times where recognizing that maybe hearing the lesson from a different instructor is probably a better thing for the people that you're trying to help, and bringing someone in from the outside and learning alongside with someone as opposed to being the instructor, like that's helped me out in the past. Plus, every time that I sit in the learner role, I always learn something new. I mean, that's why they call it the learner role. But I mean, it renews your faith in just the process, whether you're doing A3 or you're doing CATA or problem solving, whatever it is. Those are the fun moments in my career that I look back on. What do you consider the most important thing that you've learned in your career journey so far?
Oh, I didn't. Okay, I don't have a prepared answer for that. What is the most important thing? I think that people are pretty much the same. When I first started doing workplace learning, I worked a lot with frontline workers, but also executives. And for all of them, I just treat them like my students, my learners, right? If I meet together with an executive team, I think, what are these people trying to learn together? And how can I facilitate making that learner learning better? And how can I get out of their way, you know, and help them get out of their own way? So I think that's an important lesson, is that the portable skills, you know, like if you come up, like I can't do any of the jobs, right? Like I know that, right? I have actually put together a whole testing program for CNC machine operators, but I can't run a CNC machine. And I think it gives me that, the learner mindset is in my face all the time. I'm not one of those people who's like, I run all these machines and I know what's going on. No, I don't really. I mean, I kind of know the processes, but if the aliens capture me, I can't tell them the secret of how your product, your patented product works, right? I mean, I often joke about that. I have signed so many non-disclosure agreements that I don't disclose, but I'm always flattered that they imagine I understand their process enough that I could, in fact, sell some secret to somebody. Because the fact is, I probably don't deeply understand, but I know how to learn stuff and I know how to teach stuff. And that's a meta skill. Like you can, you know, the content is an end. It's about the person in front of you. So therefore, it's a puzzle that can be cracked.
The teacher hasn't taught until the learner has learned.
Absolutely. Yes. I think TWI has brought a lot of good instructional practices to workplaces who had never considered that there's more than knowledge to be transmitted. There are people to be engaged.
I love the TWI blended with Kata. I think they complement each other so easily and so well. And for the person who's responsible for the outcome of whatever yes. endeavor you're undertaking, they are incredibly simple and effective weapons to, or tools to be able to move your process forward and help everybody, not just you.
Well, and both of them limit the influence of the manager, supervisor, instructor, right? So they tell them, don't talk all the time. Don't imagine the solution. Work your way through the four steps of the process and see where you are.
Yeah, the best leaders I've ever learned from had they asked the best questions. Yeah. And they were always open-ended. I was never lucky enough to get a yes or no question.
Right.
Unless it was, do you want to be here? Right. I mean, that's right. Do you want to be here? What piece of advice would you give to someone who's just starting out with lean or continuous improvement?
Oh, I think nowadays you'd be smart to say, don't get too caught up in, how can I say this? Like the church of, you know, like don't get too caught up in the dogma of, yeah, of whatever, you know, whether it's, Toyota or whether it's Six Sigma. Like one of the things I love about Mike Rother is where he says, don't worry about what would Toyota do. What do you need to do? Like, look at yourself. So I think also, I think some good advice that Mike Rother talks about in one of his talks is choose your first jobs for how much you can learn there. Right? Like, great look advice. At that culture and how it's going to be. I was fortunate that my first job was at a university. So when you go to work at a university, people never say, you must do this way and please don't learn new stuff. No, they say, learn new stuff and try it out and, you know, go find the best teachers you can find and read their books and then go to school with them. And so I think figuring out where the opportunities will be for you to lay down some good work habits and to sort of, you know, nowadays people talk about, you know, the kind of the dying dinosaur of the command and control manager, right? So find your Ted Lasso and go work for him, even if it's less money, because that's maybe going to see you further as a person and as a worker, as a manager or as an engineer, or whatever, the further you go. So, I mean, those are things I would definitely say.
That's great advice. My first job right out of college is I was a recruiter for tier one BMW suppliers in Greenville, South Carolina, right after BMW had moved there. And we're recruiting for these positions in a vast array of different environments. And they would take the phone. Hey, I need to get this person that does, you know, whatever job title and search. And I didn't know any better, but I said, hey, that's great. Can I come see someone who's doing it right now? So I understand, like I can talk to them and understand what they need to know or whatnot. And I didn't realize no one else had done that. And I'm like, it became this, it helped me get clarity on what the requirements were, but then also I was learning about all these different jobs. I could never be a journeyman tool and die maker in an automotive environment. Mm-hmm. I failed shop, right? I won't say that, but I mean, I probably should have failed shop.
Right.
I think talking to the journeyman tool and die maker, practicing humble inquiry, asking them questions about what's important for someone to know with this skill. How can I tell somebody when they're faking it versus when they're making it? And right. those types of things, it made me a better recruiter. But I think the other thing is it taught me just to go look at the process. Go look at what they're doing.
That's that naive mindset always pays off, right? You didn't know nobody did that. So you thought I better go look or I won't know.
Yeah. I mean, it was completely naive. Looking back on it, I wish it was calculated, but it wasn't, but it worked out for me. Right.
Yeah. I have a policy in my consulting business that I only work for people I admire. And I think if you were young, if you started out that way and made sure that you could admire your boss or the company you work for something, also, I think you'll be happier at work.
Yeah. And that's a policy, not just for when you start out with, I think it's one that you need to keep with you for your career. It's difficult to work for someone you don't respect. mean, yes, exactly. They'll pick up on it too. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that kind of transitions us to the next question of what advice would you give to someone who's a little bit further along in their career, maybe the journeyman professional? Maybe it's even something someone's taught you recently that you want to share.
Well, I think keep learning, it would be a good one. And I mean, this is a really good place for me to plug the kata, maybe. Like, you know, go learn something new and learn to apply it. And if you did that through something like learning the improvement kata and the coaching kata, you would also be able to mentor people, right? So you would be able, as a middle career or even later career person, you would be able to have a way to pass along not just what you know, but the ways that you learn what you know. And you'd get a lot out of it, a lot of satisfaction and development. So I think that's one of the things I would say is take the time to mentor people, but learn how to do it well.
What I love about Mike Rother when he's giving a talk, it's the one if folks go out on YouTube and he's talking about the improvement kata or coaching kata. Because it doesn't matter what format you use, kata plays well with all of them.
In fact, when you mentioned earlier A3 and I can't remember what you said, A3 something, and I thought, well, those are all coached tools that should involve interaction between somebody using it and somebody guiding them through it to make sure they were on a kind of logical path, right? And kata plays well with all of them. And also you can use them all. You just don't use them before you know what you need them for.
Exactly. Well, this is a great point for me for a moment. I think I know the answer, but I'm gonna go ahead and ask the question anyway. Do you have a favorite book, author, or mentor that you would like to recommend?
Well, that's why I have this one here. Yes, I definitely think I would have said 10 years ago, you know, get this one. Or actually, Gemba Kaizen used to be my favorite book, mm-hmm. especially before page 90. But the Toyota Kata Practice Guide, I think everybody who's in lean these days should have one on their desk that says torn up is mine. I actually keep a few copies around just to give them to people. When I used to meet people in person, I haven't done that in a long time. But I think a walk through the practice guide and then maybe in person or remote meeting with somebody who practices that would really open new doors to somebody practicing lean and give them an idea of a new, I hate saying best practice, but a new challenge of how can you interact with knowledge? How can you interact with people? How can you use your lean tools without weaponizing them?
What I love about that book, can you lift that back up and show it again? Yep. Look at all of those tabs and folder, pieces of paper, like folded corners. And I mean, that's well used.
Yeah.
That's but for anyone who's doing this work, that's probably what your practice guide should look like. It's well used. Right.
Well, we're doing remote coaching now and I've been remote coaching for quite a few years, maybe five, but since COVID, of course, we all are. So this is so that we can say, well, you know, before you do your next step, you might want to have a look at page 207 like this, and then we'll read it together. So that's why it is right at hand because I use it almost every day.
Well, what I love is though that with remote learning, your current condition changed. Your target condition was still out there. So now it's based on where you are now. What are the obstacles and which one are you going to work on?
Yeah,
and,
exactly. I first was introduced to the kata, before I was a learner, I actually thought the learner would have a thought bubble that said, dude, you asked me this yesterday, right? But in fact, because the person who's coaching you isn't there when you're doing your step and they aren't there to know what happened and what you learned, when they walk up, it's like, oh, great. We're on the same page. Oh, great. Let me tell you what happened. Or I don't know exactly what I learned from this, but let's talk about it. And I'm glad you're here. Like that was the way it was experienced. And I also used to think, and I do still think this is part of the secret sauce of the kata, is that most of the time it's your boss who is your coach. And I don't know when is the last, when did you ever have a boss who came and just listened to you for 15 minutes a day? But in the kata, the boss comes, they only can ask sort of prescribed questions about prescribed things, and they listen to you. And I think that's got to be a big plus for people, that the person they are accountable for cares enough to come down and actually listen to them. So, but anyway, the thought bubble thing, that was, I actually did think they would say, dude, we did this yesterday. Not much has changed. But in the real world, stuff changes all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And on that note, I'm glad that thought bubbles don't just randomly appear above my head sometimes.
We can read it in your eyes.
Yeah. Emotional intelligence is a whole nother podcast from the standpoint. Well, Tracy, we know that magic wands don't exist, but if they did, and with a group that you're working with, if you had a magic wand, what would you typically wave that wand at first to try and fix?
Oh, this is an easy one. Again, I didn't actually prepare an answer, but I can tell you the thing I need to fix is that most people we meet in who are in industry, who we're coaching, have no idea of reflection. Like when you say, what did you learn? Or what did you learn about your process? What did you learn about yourself? What did you learn about what you expected? Most of them give you like complete blank stares because they think there's a right answer. And they want to get the right answer. Second of all, they are not used to being reflective. So if I could go, I would make it part of every great kindergarten curriculum. So by the time you get in the workforce and somebody comes along and says, oh, that was really interesting. What did you learn? You'll reflect on that for a minute and write something down tomorrow. What did you learn? There was an actual honest to God answer because... I think that's a real shortcoming of most people. And we have to work really hard to get people to honestly reflect on what they actually think is going on.
I think Mike Orzin in a previous podcast episode we talked about was that practicing mindfulness. And, you know, when you think about what the practice he uses is around meditation, but it's a period of reflection. When you're alone with your thoughts and just your thoughts, you have to figure out how to put them in an organized way and throw out the ones that don't matter to make room for the new ones you're going to get for tomorrow. But whether it's you're writing in a journal, whether it's you're practicing meditation, whether it's just quiet time alone,
writing down what you learned. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So everyone should have a period of reflection. And I think that's something that gets lost when people are doing their leader standard work. It's, you know, they have all these things that they're doing. And one of the first things that I go look at with someone that I'm coaching is where's your period of reflection? How do you know that the things that need to be done have been done, the things you need to think about have been thought about, and that you're prepared for the next set of challenges.
Right.
And all too often we're just trying to blow through our to-do list.
Yeah. And so then you'll just repeat the same mistakes. You're going to set and then put out the same fires, right? You're going to fail to develop people and say, I'll do it myself. It's faster like that. That's going to happen.
I am on a crusade, so to speak, to get rid of the term firefighting as a reactive way in business, because firefighters are probably the most professional, well-trained group of individuals in the world.
My dad was a firefighter.
Thank you. So you know this. They approach how to extinguish a fire in a very methodical, professional, well-trained kind of way.
Yes,
they don't react in a firefight. They react to their, they rely on their training for that. So I am on a crusade for that.
They're also fantastic cross trainers, right? Like they literally, I suppose maybe like the military, they prepare that you may not come tomorrow and someone has learned your job. So basically you're always learning your boss's job or you're cross training with your peers. And not very many businesses are good at that.
Yeah. My roommate in college was in the submarine fleet. And I asked him, I said, you know, what did you do on the submarine? He goes, well, everything. He goes, my primary job was this, but I did everything. And he goes, everyone's a firefighter on a submarine, whether they want to be or not. Right.
Right.
So
literally, that's the all hands.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you had mentioned the Kata Club, the girls Kata, women's Kata program. How can people connect with you if they want to learn more about the things that you're doing or if they have a question for you based on what they've heard today in the interview?
Sure. Well, my consulting business is called The Learning Factor. And so I'm, my initials, TD at thelearningfactor.com or .ca. CA is Canada. They both go to the same place. I'm also one of the founders of Kata School Cascadia. So if you CATA schools are like this worldwide, I sometimes talk of them as being billboards on the World Wide Web. They're just like, are you looking for people who maybe practice CATA where you are? Find the CATA school. So there's a cool map that shows CATA schools around the world. Ours is both, it's the west coast of Canada and the United States. So that geographic area is called Cascadia. It's named both after mountain range, but also an earthquake fault, right? So it's a geographic area. We were a pre-existing group of practitioners and coaches who were in the kind of Vancouver to San Francisco corridor. So we took Cascadia as our name. So CATA school and look for the one on the West Coast. I answered that email, info@CATA school. And then the CATA Girl Geeks, which is a women's group. If you are a female person or you know one who's interested maybe in meeting a whole bunch of women who are helping each other learn and practice the CATA, or if you just want to come and at your CATA curious, that's one of my claims to fame, is I actually coined the term CATA curious. I know, it's great. Although I use the C because I'm an old English teacher, so I'm not putting K's on things for no reason. But anyway, if you're just curious, you can email iwanttojoin@catagirlgeeks.com and we will invite you to an onboarding meeting and one of our coffees. So those are three great ways. And also I'm on LinkedIn, of course. And
of course.
Twitter.
I will put all of those links in the show notes
page.
For the gentlemen that are listening to the podcast, the best way that you can support someone, a woman in your group, is to refer her. Like, you don't have to be a woman to support the women's group.
That's right. Well, also, guys can contact their local CATA school. There's one in Michigan now. There's us on the West Coast. There's some people putting together one in South Carolina, I'm going to say. I don't know what they've called it yet. And they're all volunteers just looking to help people find the CATA community. We didn't actually talk about it, but a few years ago, I started looking into people who, I called it CATA in secret. That's people who were using the CATA or learning the CATA in an organization where their boss had told them not to do it because their Lean Legacy program didn't know what it was.
CATA and so, undercover.
Yeah, CATA incognito, some people call it. Yeah, exactly. So the CATA school is a remedy to CATA in secret that you can find the community to help you learn. Often just volunteers who will listen to your stories and help you get on the right path.
I love with the Cascadia, it's really CATA without borders, right?
Exactly. That's us. Yes, no. Coaches sans frontières. Yeah.
Tracy, I appreciate you giving time to the podcast today.
It was fun. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Well, I hope we can have you on again in the future. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I really want to thank Tracy for being a guest on the podcast today. Be sure to go to the show notes page at leanleadershippodcast.com and check out the links on how to connect with Tracy if you have a question about what we talked about today. As always, I welcome your feedback on how to improve the podcast. If you like the podcast, make sure to subscribe and leave a rating on the podcast in whatever channel you listen to us on. Thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, seek progress.
Thanks for listening to the Lean Leadership Podcast with Chris Burnham. Get more info, resources, tools, or connect at leanleadershippodcast.com.